A pocket full of healing with Pinky.
Hey, bestie. If the rug has been pulled out from under you, it's fair to say many other things will fall apart or end or dramatically change along with your marriage or relationship. Everything gets a shake-up. Emotionally, financially, spatially, physically, it goes on and on, doesn't it? In this episode, I wanted to talk about when my back locked up and I couldn't get out of bed. Literally. I even had my daughter come and grab me a broom. That is how stubborn and determined I can be. I was like, surely I just need like a crutch or something to lean on. Nah, could not move. An ambulance had to come and get me. This was the night and day after my ex told me he wanted to get divorced. Whilst he was on the other side of the world for a business trip we had organised with his lover at the time. Not that he actually was honest about that part, but I knew. I was just sick to my core about what had been happening. Of course, there had been a lead up and I was so confused. I had whiplash. I did not know what the fuck was going on. But you know, no biggie. Thanks for that. I just need to get up and go to work the next morning nice and early, have the babysitter come around to get my daughter ready for school. Yeah, sure. Let's just keep on moving forward. Stress can and will fuck you up royally. So after that major initial shock, which did actually end up lasting for a few weeks until I actually got the truth of what my actual bullshit marriage was, I obviously had to see someone to get some help. And I got help for about 18 months with regular physio treatment. There were stock standard suggestions like your glutes are weak, your hammies are tight. And I would improve and then I would start running or doing some sort of exercise. And then it would lock up again, not to the point of being paralysed, but in a world of pain, struggling to walk normally, bunched over, awkward. It was really terrible. Finally, a workmate did suggest I go and see Glenn. Now, I did mention in the last episode that we were going to talk about physiotherapy. And I did believe that Glenn was an exercise physiotherapist because he does run a whole bunch of physios out of his business that he runs with his wife at Vector Health. But no, he is not an exercise physio. And we cleared this up at the start of recording this podcast. The biggest key to my healing and getting better, apart from meeting Glenn, who obviously knew how to get things sorted for me, was that he listened. So that is why we've called this episode Listening in Healthcare. So over to the man that healed me and showed me how to heal myself. There is documented evidence that stressful events in our lives can lead to health problems, and divorce rates as the second most stressful event for adults. First is the death of a spouse or child. Now I'm going to introduce Glenn Hansen. He is a level 2 strength and conditioning coach, been a personal trainer for 20 years and runs a business called Vector Health with a whole bunch of legends there, including physiotherapists right here in my hometown. Glenn, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
No worries, Pinky. Thank you for having me.
You were the first person in your field to wholeheartedly agree with me about this, that my lower back completely locking out and leaving me unable to move was absolutely connected to my marriage ending, and I never felt more heard in my life.
Well, I remember that moment. And the most important thing that you can do in our job is to listen to the person. So that'd be the first thing. Like, if anyone's listening and you feel like someone's not listening to you, so you know when someone's listening to you, when they will paraphrase things back to you that they've heard.
Yes.
So, you know, for instance, you know, I keep getting this sore back. Whenever I get stressed, my back gets really, really sore. So what makes you stressed? You know, like, what's happening in your life? You need to understand that before you start just throwing exercise at someone, because maybe exercise isn't necessarily the answer straight away. Maybe it's just learning how to reduce your stress level, because there's heaps of evidence to say that the higher your physiological distress or stress level, the more you're going to be sensitized to any pain that you have. So if that's the case, then listening is the most important thing, because if we don't start with understanding what is going to happen if we just add more exercise to an already existing problem. And then the other thing with lower back is one of the parts of your body that you don't want to keep sensitizing you to pain. So Everything that I've learned over all the years is find a position that is pain-free, because first of all, we need to desensitize the area, so then we can actually start to make the problem sort of sort itself out. So that might happen from core stability, or it might happen from mobility, it might happen from just understanding how to move and how to not put yourself in the same position that's making you sore.
Well, we actually got the results with how you go about things. And I think that was the thing. I was completely lost and I couldn't move properly. And every time I'd start moving okay, my back would go out and I'd be, yeah, I wouldn't even be able to walk with posture. I was just all basically literally screwed up physically. But you took me through a range of exercises when we first met. And there were a few other visits followed up after that to get you to fully comprehend what was actually wrong, because the lower back area is really complex, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things that, there's a number of movement patterns that you go through. So you go through flexion, which is bending forward, extension, bending back, lateral flexion is bending to the side, and then you've got twist rotation, you've got a shearing force going across the spine that someone can't handle, so therefore they get a lot of pain with that. And so most people have flexion-related injuries. So most people I see, you bend over, you hurt your back, and then it hurts to keep bending forward. Unfortunately, if you think about life in general, like if you sit down for a job, you're in flexion. So, for instance, there's a really cool diagram that you can just research on the internet called the pressure on lumbar spine discs. And so if you stand up, you know, 100% disc pressure applied, and if you sit down, it can go up to 140% of disc pressure. So you've actually added 40% by sitting down. And most people would think that sitting down is good for their spine, but in some cases it's not for some people. So it's just things like that, that where, you know, you just need to, you need to know that in the back of your mind when you're helping someone, because if they're flexion-orientated spine, then you've got to go and find a position for them that isn't flexion, so then they can desensitize, hopefully re-stabilize and get out of pain so that you're not so jilted in your movement patterns. Because you won't get someone to move freely if they're in pain. It just generally won't happen. So it is about just understanding the anatomy and the physiology, understanding the person, how much stress are they in, like how, you know, and a lot, like pain causes stress and stress causes, sort of exacerbates pain. So in some cases, so it's you just got to understand and then connect with the person to then get them to, you know, kind of not relax is maybe the not right word, but just settle everything down so then they can do something useful. But if they can't do that at the start, then you've got to focus on how to get someone to calm, to a calm point. And sometimes it's very hard. So from my point of view, like if I'm working with a female, sometimes it's very hard to ask the questions that you need to ask. You've got to be very sensitive about that, because when you start going down, like let's say a rabbit hole of what has happened to someone, and make that happen. So you talk about divorce as a stressful event, but all the events leading up to that particular point, yes, the divorce might be stressful. What happened to that person leading up to that point is also the things that are really like
absolutely
going to add to that stress component and stress profile of a person. So, and you talk about, you know, you can talk about things like there's been any abuse or any sort of threat of violence and that sort of stuff that exacerbates stress more. So things like that, you know, you need to, you can't just barrel in first guns blazing like in, you know, some sort of police officer and start asking questions. You have to go about that sensitively and quietly to develop that trust.
This leads me to this next bit that you were just addressing with being stressed and the way the body responds and the way the person may not be in a calm space. Breathing. Breathing was an unexpected tool, like a huge key to my recovery and training with you for the next couple of years. It was so important to the exercises you set me, and I was actually quite blown away at what a big part it played. I did not expect that.
Well, there's a couple of different types of breathing techniques. There's breathing to reduce stress. So there's a couple of breathing techniques that, you know, probably on a podcast you can't go through them exactly, but you can look them up. But there people that are skilled in that domain can help someone literally reduce your arousal levels. So arousal is like related to anxiety. So if you are optimally aroused at, say, 70 out of 100, and you are at 95 out of 100 right now, and you stay like that, then you're not in a good place. You're over-aroused.
Yes.
If you're under-aroused, so that could be argued, that could be like almost like a depression kind of situation,
yep,
then maybe you might be sitting at 25 out of, and your optimum is 75. So, I mean, you're a long way below that. So you can't get yourself excited. You can't get yourself up to meet expectations that you might have. So when you're talking about breathing, there's breathing to reduce anxiety, and that's a commonly used strategy by tons of psychologists and,
yeah,
people in that realm to do that. Breathing for exercise is quite different. So you have a bunch of areas in your body that respond to inter-abdominal pressure. So by creating that inter-abdominal pressure, you give yourself more core stability in saying. So if the way I explain it to people, which some may not agree with, but this is the way I explain it to people, works for me, is that you have 5 to 6 vertebrae kind of thing separating your rib cage from your pelvis. So
they're
fairly small bones. So your skeleton holds your body upright. The only way that you're going to assist those 5 vertebrae is to get more pressure build up in your trunk area, which is essentially from your shoulders down to your pelvis. From your ribcage to your pelvis, there's a bunch of muscle, there's a bunch of organs that sit inside, and then there's a bunch of free space. What you're trying to do is build pressure in the free space as such to create like a barrel effect. So if you look at a wine barrel, if a wine barrel leaks, the wine will come out of the barrel, and eventually the barrel will break because of the pressure going through the leak.
Yes.
That's kind of the way we explain like core stability to people when we're teaching them how to brace, so then they can be effective in movement patterns.
Now, how do we also talk to people listening about when it's time for a second opinion? As I referred to earlier, I had been seeing physiotherapists for about 18 months and I just kept going backwards, forwards, backwards, and I wasn't, just moving forward and getting better. It was really frustrating and depressing. And then you start thinking, oh, I'm just going to have chronic pain. I'm not going to be able to ride a bike again regularly. You just feel a bit doomed and the diagnoses you're getting aren't actually correct. So when do we tell? When is it time to get a second opinion and maybe actually we don't need to accept the way things are going?
So this is quite complicated. So I might paint a couple of different scenarios so people can listen.
Mm.
So it's very dependent on someone's own inner self-confidence. I'll say that right now. So a therapist will obviously try to have a strategy and they want to impart that strategy on their patient. And as a coach, maybe coaches and therapists might think of things differently. So I don't really have patients, I have people. So I see people, I don't see patients. So when I'm looking at that, I'm looking at the whole person. So our job as a coach of performance in any context is to coach the whole person.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to understand like what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel, I suppose, that you're seeing someone and it's a fair bit of money to see a physio these days, let's say, if you're seeing a physio. So you might pay $100 for half an hour for some people and sometimes more. You know, I'll use my wife as an example, Mish. You know, she'd be one of the best listeners that I've ever worked with. And that makes her a really successful therapist in a women's health environment. Because it's not what she does with her hands, the most important thing. It's what she does with her ears and then the translation back to that patient to know that they know that she understands and she's going to do something. The actions that she takes are like, in a lot of the cases, they're very automated in terms of she's done this 100 to 200 to 800 to 1500 times before just to the same type of person as you. So you know that you're getting that system. But it's the listening components that's critical. So if someone won't make eye contact with you in a consultation, you've got to ask yourself the question, if you were doing your job, and you were saying to someone, and you refused to make eye contact with one of your customers, would they trust you?
Mm.
And if you can't answer that question positively, you know, from that person that you're talking to, and they're not doing things like active communication strategies, like talking back to you, if they're talking over the top of you, if they're cutting you off all the time. And sometimes in conversations, you've only got half an hour sometimes. So you're trying to go fast. You're trying to get a little win for somebody. Like, We talk to our guys about you've just got to win that first little 20, 30 minutes by just nailing something back to that patient that just demonstrates you've understood what the problem is, because most people don't get to the problem. And I'll use McGill as an example, and he's just one of many very, very good people that is very good at listening and then just understanding the problem. He's really big on getting the correct problem, like figuring it out.
Yeah.
If you can't figure out the problem, how are you going to possibly figure out a solution that's going to last?
Yeah.
Make sure you know that they know what the problem is.
Yeah. Not just, your glutes are a bit weak.
Yeah, and then I mean, we could get into a myriad of arguments about people having weakness.
Yeah.
If you go into a room and you switch a light on and the light doesn't come on, then you're still going to be in darkness. Now, there could be a problem with the light bulb. So if the light bulb's blown, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So let's equate that to having a muscle tear. Your muscle's not going to work very well if the light's blown. However, if there's a problem behind the light switch and the light switch is not working properly,
yeah,
that light bulb can be 300 watts.
Yeah.
It's not going to light off unless the switch works.
Yes.
The way I explain it to people is sometimes when things happen, when pain happens, pain can cause an inhibition of function in a muscle. So the firing of the electrical system in the body isn't going to be very effective.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter how strong something is. It's not going to work because you can't make it work. And that's why I don't really do half an hour appointments. Like, it might take me 30 minutes, 40 minutes, sometimes more, to really get to the bottom of something. So then in the next session with that person, then I can start fixing. But if you start fixing too quickly, you haven't really understood why and what is happening.
That's the best case
that I could make for why you would seek a second opinion is if your physio spends half an hour just listening to you and watching you move and understanding that first session, and they don't do anything else to you, then you're probably on to someone that's really good.
Our first session, you listened and watched me and we did nothing. But you were sitting there absorbing all of this information and observing me, and then you nailed it and we got it sorted. And it absolutely is a puzzle, which I have learned over that time with yourself and, of course, your wife, Mish, a physio as well. The other thing I did think was interesting, just in general, from what I learned through getting my lower back healed, was that when you talk about pain, there's so much talk in our culture, I think, in years past or with PTs, where the idea is feel the pain and do it anyway, you know, push through, which can be really detrimental or lead to injuries. But what I had been learning with yourself is that pain was an indication of an issue. And you guys never told me to push through the pain. That was like, well, no, don't do that. If there's pain, we don't do that. But also what I learned was, with lower back injuries, you know, it's so much pain there, which makes you feel like, oh, I've got to stay in bed. I can't move. Like, I'm really hurting. But actually, the medicine is to move.
Yeah, it can be really confusing.
It was a lot of like you're saying, like this listening and learning. It was a lot of undoing in kind of previous thoughts that we think we know about our bodies and what we're meant to do. Yeah.
And for some people, laying down with a back injury can be the most useful thing they can do because they're taking the stress away from their spine.
Yep.
But other people, laying down hurts. So that's where, I mean, on a podcast, you can't tell people how to fix their problem.
No, we're not doing that.
No. But what I'm saying is, if what someone gives you makes you in more pain, you've got to be honest with them saying this really hurts. And then if you're not getting a listening approach, there are some back conditions that will hurt and it will be very, very hard to get rid of that pain. However, that is in a very low category. And I'll quote McGill, there's, you know, in quote marks, there is no such thing as non-specific back pain, end quote.
Glenn Hansen, thank you so much for all the talk today about our back health and listening.
That's all right. No worries. Yes. Listen more. Very good. Very useful.
Yes. On that note, I should add that I've actually enjoyed really great back health for a solid 2 years now. I continue to do personal training and strength work with Glenn and his team for a couple of years, twice a week for the first year and once a week for the second year. And then also was learning more about how to maintain my back and how to care for it moving forward. So yeah, I certainly wouldn't be enjoying my life the way I am back again, not feeling 1,000 years old without them. So I hope until we meet again, you are listened to. And keep me in your pocket.
A pocket full of healing with Pinky.
Sunshine heals the soul.